Ladies and gentlemen, the Football Scoop Podcast is back. It's Tuesday morning, week three. Heck of a slate coming up. Week two did not disappoint. We told you week two got pretty awesome, and it was kind of pretty awesome. You know, JB and I have been doing a little inside stuff, inside scoop series, going conference by conference on some potential coaching changes. We had already told you Virginia Tech, you know, that was coming. We hadn't gotten to write the Big Ten yet, but we were going to tell you UCLA was pretty terrible, and that's a dumpster fire. Gentlemen, week two. What's your biggest takeaway from week two? Just give me one big takeaway, other than UCLA being atrocious at football. Anybody got anything else? JB, you were there for Notre Dame. Give me a short feel on Notre Dame season.
I mean, Notre Dame season is literally on the brink. 2 weeks, two games, and 3 weeks, three weekends into the college football season. They had to play with pressure on their backs for 10 consecutive weeks last year to make the playoff because they had lost at home to Northern Illinois. But this is different because that team that lost to Northern Illinois had gone and won at Texas A&M to open its season. So they're not bad losses, but there's not a lot out there left on their schedule. And this team has yet to show why you should believe it could win 10 in a row. So I have to give Zach credit like I did Sunday. He said they're more likely to start 0-2 than to win more than 10.5 games. So he was right. But I think a lot of that centered on, well, they had an unproven quarterback. Well, they haven't lost a game because C.J. Carr. C.J. Carr, for a guy who didn't play any last year, who was hurt a bunch last year, and who has no college experience, has played very effectively, if not admirably. And they've lost because suddenly they have no defensive identity.
Holding call. Would
yeah, my
anyway. Sorry, go ahead, Zach.
My biggest takeaway, and I said this on the pod Sunday, told you this, I was just incredibly impressed by Georgia. I think this is a team that the rumors of their demise have been greatly exaggerated. To go on the road and win like that, trailing 21-7, 28-27, on and on and on. I mean, they're chasing that game the entire time. Tennessee got multiple leads, and Georgia just kept coming back. You know, I said this on the pod, but culture is like pornography. It's hard to define on a piece of paper, but you know it when you see it. And I knew Tennessee was going to lose that game when they didn't go score a touchdown after they forced that fumble when they're up 35-30. And they gave Georgia a window. They did what they had to do to go win that game. So I think Georgia, their coaches, when they got, you know, back home and decompressed a little bit, like they probably, their group chat was like, we got a team, boys. We got a real chance to go win this national championship. And then another overarching takeaway is a lot of the quarterbacks that everyone was real excited about from a draft perspective, almost all of them are underperforming so far. There's certainly one in Austin that we talked about, but Lenora Sellers, not been great so far. Garrett Nussmeier, LSU's offense has been bad. Cade Klubnik, Clemson's offense has been bad. Drew Aller. Certainly some guys are overperforming, to be sure. But a lot of those top name guys so far don't have the juice we all thought they did.
Doug, you got anything?
Yeah, for me, I'm on the flip side of the Georgia-Tennessee matchup. I think there was a lot of promise showed by the Vols squad. I know they gave up 44, but I think when you look at their remaining schedule, I mean, they've got a beatable – they've got a couple unranked teams, we'll just say, you know, UAB should be a route. Mississippi State's much improved from where they were last year with Jeff Lebby. Arkansas can maybe nip you, but their ranked teams right now are Alabama, Oklahoma, and end the season with Vanderbilt. Three very winnable games in the SEC. You could see the Vols going into college playoff contention with one loss, and a one-loss SEC team with their resume is going to get in. So I really like the Vols. I think Joey Swaggular has been the steal of the transfer portal. I know he was a highly coveted ish dude coming out of the portal, but he has played, I think, well beyond what anyone expected through this first part of the season.
Do we think that Aguilar is maybe sending Nico thank you notes every single day? Because Aguilar is part of the worst team in major college football. If he's not, now maybe they're not the worst team because they would have Joy Swags. I hope he's sending Doug's guy Nico Iamaliava thank you notes on the reg. My other takeaway would be, I know Scott, you asked me about Notre Dame. My overarching takeaway, three full weekends into the season, is there's not a super team. I would contend this is maybe college football's most open playoff field in quite some time. I don't see a super team out there.
Okay, so
Ohio State is wrecking fools.
Grambling? No. Are you really gonna? No, that was like a one score game with Ohio. Very deep into that contest. They're good. I'm not saying there's not good teams, but there is not that Ohio State team isn't last year's Ohio State team. Maybe
Oregon. Okay.
I think Oregon has a better chance of being a super team this year than this Ohio State team.
I think.
All right, JB. If I gave you Ohio State and Georgia to win the national championship or the field, Ohio State and Georgia one side, the fields on the other, what are you taking?
I think I'm taking the field. I'm very captivated by Oregon. Dante Moore, who I've been familiar with for years now because he was coveted by the Notre Dame regime, headed by now USC GM Chad Bowden, and very nearly ended up being Irish. So I'm very familiar with him, and I would contend he's exceeding the hype right now, especially for kind of how inconspicuously his college career started. But there's another guy who's probably sending thank you notes to however he escaped. He's like modern Kurt Russell. He escaped L.A.
my overarching take through a couple of weeks in is Ohio State and Oregon are for real, and they're fun to watch. And I think they're going to be really hard to beat, and it's going to be fun. Penn State's defense is very good. Until Penn State's offense beats a real team, I won't get there. Just my personal opinion, having many years of experience in this field. I was at Ole Miss, Arkansas. I talked about it before. Arkansas always does something weird with Ole Miss, and darn it, they darn near won that game again. That was something. Hence, I didn't get to see much of LSU offense, which obviously was not great. Brian Kelly, after the fact, first question fields it and kind of went off defending his team. I saw that after the fact. It didn't upset me. I know some people got upset by it. Zach, I know he came out yesterday and apologized for it. I was like, whatever, just go get better. Like, at the end of the day, it's just about points and wins. Thoughts there, gentlemen?
To me, I think Brian Kelly was totally in the wrong there. I mean, is it history's greatest crime? Of course not. But, you'd think by his response that it was some slimily worded question of, Coach, your offense was 4-14. You only scored 13 points. What's wrong with your offense? Why are you so terrible? If the question was worded that way, I'd understand it. But the question was literally, let me see the exact word so I can get this. What are you seeing with your offense? That was the question. And then he twerked off like that. Like, he could have said, hey.
No, the question was not, what are you seeing with your offense?
I have the clip. I watched the clip. What are you seeing with your offense?
That was all he said. Coach, what are you seeing with your offense? No way.
Yes, it was. Watch. And then Brian, he didn't even get to finish it because Brian Kelly twerked off on him.
That was like, he didn't even finish it. What, yes. Coach, what are you seeing with your offense?
Yes.
There had to have been a lead into that.
Go watch. He has a big old opening statement that what are you seeing with your offense? And then Brian Kelly went off on that. Go watch the video.
I just listened to it. That's why I had the phone up to my ear. And he said, Coach, I know you love these immediate post-game sessions, but what are you seeing with your offense? First of all, I'm going to answer, but Doug was not in his head in agreement with me about Oregon. So I still want Doug's thoughts on Oregon in a moment because I particularly like it when he agrees with me. Secondly, and firstly, back to Brian Kelly, I said this off air. I'll say it again. I've been snack caked a bunch by coaches and in press conferences, and I've probably deserved just about every single one of them. I'm sure I deserved almost every single one of them. But I think there's a better way you could have asked that. And to me, like, what are you seeing with your offense? And Brian cut him off, so we don't know how he was going to finish. And that's not a horrible question. Thank God he asked a question instead of just saying, talk about your offense, because that's not even a question. That's just lazy. So he did ask a question, but I had this discussion with my wife, and I just think you could have phrased it better, like, what does it say about your team that your offense only had 10 first downs, but you found a way to win? And then you follow up with what's the next step? How does your offense evolve from here? Where does your offense go from here? So I get it. I also think it was a bit performative by BK, because he wants his team to feel like he has its back. And so I don't think BK needed to apologize. And I don't know how many times I don't know. I've had a couple of coaches apologize to me by text message after they've punked me. But again, I told them, I was like, hey, I asked a bad question, or I phrased it poorly, or I was trashed that day. So I think the phraseology could have been better. I didn't have a problem with it. I was sitting in front of Marcus Freeman yesterday after he talked about the need for everyone in the program to elevate. And I asked him how he challenged himself and his coaches. What do they need to do better to elevate? So I just think it's all in how you ask the question and phrase the question. I think BK probably has a different response if you ask it a little bit more diplomatically, rather than sounding like, first question, you beat a Florida team that beat you last year. And the first question, mm-hmm. what's wrong with your offense? Essentially, what's wrong with your offense?
I mean, BK clearly took it. That's how he interpreted the question, because he knows their offense was bad. The offense got five interceptions. One was taken back to the house, so they turned the other four picks plus all their other opportunities into 13 points.
Yeah.
So Brian Kelly clearly knows that his offense is not well, but I think it's a totally fair question, and Brian Kelly could have phrased it in a defensive, you know, say, hey, you know, we did what we needed to do tonight. We won the game, which I know we wanted to get there. That was the crux of his answer, but I have no problem with that, the open-ended question. I think it was a totally fair question to ask.
Yeah, it was. I'm not at all. I'm not going to sit here, because I wasn't there. I'm not going to sit here and second guess another reporter. I'm just saying it. I think it could have been phrased differently. And as having had my share of poorly worded questions and gotten punked before it, I don't think BK needed to apologize. Kudos to him for apologizing. He was very clearly, that was as in his mind, that was as could. A scripted response is him banging the table after they lost to USC in Las Vegas last year. Like, that was theater. You know, it should have been included on Nate Bargatze's highlights for the Emmys on Sunday night.
I want to add real quick. Number one, every time I'm on this podcast, I learn something new. I've never heard the term snack caked before. So I'm adding that to my terminology to use in the future from old JB. But I don't know why we're crucifying Brian Kelly for being exactly who he has been his entire career. Like dating back to his Grand Valley days, no guys that played for him, no guys that coached for him. He's been in college football for long enough to know that he's going to have fiery moments. So now when he has a fiery moment, we're going to criticize him after a tight SEC contest. Like I don't understand why we're even having that discussion or conversation. Like, he is who he is. He bangs on the table. He gets fiery. And then lastly, like, yes, he did apologize yesterday, but I heard someone talking recently, don't ruin an apology with an excuse. And he followed up his apology with justification for why he did it. Again, Brian Kelly being Brian Kelly is par for the course at this time of year.
I mean, I don't know that anybody's crucifying him, and I don't know that he needed to apologize. I expect that he did. I respect that he did. I don't know that anybody's crucifying him. I also don't think we need to treat him like he's some emotional baby. When the dude, this is part of your job. You get paid a lot of money to do this. Like, be better.
Whatever. because it's fun to think about conspiracy theories, because they actually come true so often. All right, I'm gonna give you guys one. Diego Pavia is in his sixth year playing college football currently. The NCAA has given him a waiver, which they say they will allow to remain in place even if he loses his court case. And the oral arguments are today in his court case. So they're making the court case saying, hey, this five-year thing shouldn't really apply. Diego's a unique talent, but there's other ones. He can make more money. He and others like him could make more money staying in college than going to the NFL, potentially laying the framework for he wants to stay a seventh, eighth, ninth year. So oral arguments are today. A decision is not expected today. It's expected down the line a couple of months. Here's my conspiracy theories. So let's just say a month and a half, 2 months from now, Zach Barnett eloquently wrote, don't rule out the chance that Vandy's in this SEC championship mix. Right before that comes out, ruling comes out against him. The NCAA's got this waiver out there saying, he could play six. And they're like, wait, you got a appeals court just says, nah, dog, that ain't real. Does the NCAA, through the discussion of influencers, decide Diego shouldn't play the rest of the season?
I don't think if they've given him the waiver, then I don't think they could. I don't think that's toothpaste they're going to try to put back into the tube. Now, I think the discussion of career longevity and guys that want to stay. We just saw it with Zakai Ziegler at Tennessee in basketball. Pardon, he lost his case. Dude had played like 140 career basketball games and wanted to keep playing only because he's not an NBA prospect and he's not an NBA point guard. What are we doing with college athletics if that's the case? And how much then do we start to see soccer players or college hockey players or gymnasts, what have you, women's basketball players? Women's basketball players are making more money than the average WNBA salary right now. They're not
by far.
They don't have the endorsement deals yet that the WNBA stars are getting. But yeah, that bothers me. The calendar portion of it bothers me. Kudos to Diego and saying that JUCO shouldn't count against his NCAA calendar. But I think it's going to move to you got 5 years to play five. I think that's where we're ultimately going to land.
So you got Diego Pavia right here going, I'm in year six and I'm dump trucking dudes. and he wants to come back for year seven.
That would technically be five for five at the NCAA level. Because didn't
okay, – they're basically arguing – yeah,
right.
Yeah, junior college is like high school. It doesn't count towards your college years. Okay, two things. One, if the NCAA retroactively rules Diego Pavia ineligible in season, I will cut my hair to look like Scott's. Two things. Yes. I'm no legal expert, but I know there's another case going on of, hey, we just want 5 years. We promise we'll stop there. Again, with you, if you draw the line at five, I don't know why you can't draw it at eight or 12. Like, why not just stay at four? Like,
it's arbitrary, sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Everyone can acknowledge that the number is arbitrary. So you want to arbitrarily stay five while someone else wants nine. All right, well, it's been four for forever. Mm-hmm. Let's just keep it four. Having said that, I remember in middle school 25 years ago reading a column by Terry Bowden in a magazine, kids, they used to make those in the Sporting News, when he argued for a fifth year of eligibility. This was long, long ago before anyone knew what the word NIL term was. So this argument's been out there for a long, long time. I doubt Terry Bowden originated it. So this is not new in any way. But obviously it's taken more seriously now because we've turned being a college athlete into a lucrative job, which I'm fully on board with. I think these guys deserve to get paid what they're worth. But at the same time, I'm totally against the idea. Well, I'm making a lot of money, so just let me stay as long as I want. No, you have your opportunity because someone in front of you exhausted their eligibility and moved on. It's time for you to do the same.
Yeah, because the lawsuit that's then coming is going to be for the youth, for the people that Doug is coaching, for the eventual players that you're also coaching, Zach. Like, those are the people now getting screwed by selfish people like Zakai Ziegler and others who just want to continue making fat stacks because they're good in college and they're marketable in college, but they're not pro. Like, that bothers me. Like, I get Diego's argument, and I can be on board with saying, okay, junior college is like prep school because prep school doesn't count against your NCAA eligibility, and junior college, it's the NJCAA, not the NCAA, NJCAA. So I get that. That's not part of the NCAA. I'm willing to concede that argument. I'm not willing to concede it in the case of Ziegler, who I keep referencing, because he was in college the entire time, in NCAA program the entire time, and played 140 games and then wanted to keep going. That bothers me. Like, it's just selfishness. It's just taking college opportunities away from, again, Doug's players and every other high school coach's players out there. And what it's then doing is it's ultimately pushing it down to where it's taking opportunities away at all levels of college football, not just FBS, because then you're flooding FBS with these old dudes, and that's pushing other guys down to FCS, which is still great football, but then that's pushing other guys down to D2 and other guys down to D3. And then soon people are still sitting on the sidelines, or they're done playing forever because of selfishness.
I'm here for Kirby Smart. The week where the ruling comes down and it's against Diego, and the NCAA is like, and so somebody says to the NCAA, well, you have this waiver out there, but the court just ruled that this is illegal. And I'm just here for Kirby Smart being like, I mean, the guy's illegal. I don't know why. We're preparing for the other guy because, I mean, they can't play him, right? He's illegal. It's going to be amazing.
Well, pump my own content, the only way that would ever happen is if Vanderbilt's in the SEC championship game or the playoff, because they don't play in the regular season.
I'm here for Zach's content.
Doug, your thoughts on Oregon and this matter.
And Zach saying my haircut, not yours.
I don't have any hair on the sides here, so I think that's the delineation. Another word I learned from JB, I'm sure, on a podcast. I agree with you, JB. I think I said last week, you know, there's chatter about Dante Moore being the best Oregon quarterback the school has ever had, and he's living up to that. Super, super talented dude going back to his high school days. And I absolutely agree that Oregon is at the among the cream of the crop in college football right now. We didn't even mention Miami. They're playing as well as anyone in the country right now. Zach mentioned two teams or the field. I would also agree the field. I think the top 5 to 7 teams in college football right now have a chance, but as injuries and the rest of the year plays out, you know, a lot of that can change. As far as this goes, like, the transfer portal has already borderline ruined high school recruiting. If you're going to allow kids to stay 6, 7, 8 years, the only way I'm in favor of that as a high school head coach is if they're doctors. If they're going to be a doctor and they want to play college football, then sure. But also, I don't know if I want those people operating on me or my children, if you're trying to juggle those two things. So if you want to be a doctor and go to school for 8 years and play college football and try to juggle that, then sure. Otherwise, I'm not a proponent. I know that the NCAA doesn't make rules with high school student athletes and coaches and families in mind, but that should absolutely be part of the conversation if this goes further down the road.
Week 3 is legit loaded. This is going to be a great week in college football. They're all great weeks in college football. For the Football Scoop Podcast, we greatly enjoy these conversations. This week, JB and I got another little inside scoop piece coming for you probably Thursday morning. Look for it. We just enjoy sharing what we're hearing, trying to help the world be a better place. With that, we're out.